Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Life is full of things to manage. Your work, your family, your plans, and your treatment. Consider Kesimpta, ofatumumab 20 milligram injection. You can take it yourself from the comfort of home. If you're ready for something different, ask your healthcare provider about Kesimpta and check out the details at kesimpta.com. Brought to you by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is a show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. This isn't really a true crime podcast, but today's episode sure puts it in that category. Ramon and Lulu got married, and for the first few years, it was great. They had a business that was doing very well. They built a new house. They had cars and nice clothes. Life was good. Of course, every marriage has its ups and downs. If you're married, you know what I mean. But in most cases, a marriage that goes bad just ends in a divorce, and eventually everyone gets on with their lives. That's not what happened with Ramon and Lulu. Ramon was okay with getting a divorce, and he wanted to split everything 50-50. Lulu didn't want that. She wanted everything. And if she couldn't have everything, she wanted Ramon dead. So she paid someone to kill him. I had a great conversation with Ramon, so obviously he's not dead. But he has been through quite a horrific ordeal, including lying in his own grave while being photographed as if he had been shot in the head. Like I said, not your typical divorce story. I'll have pictures on the website as well as a video of Lulu on a day that didn't go very well for her. And now, please enjoy my conversation with Ramon. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird is the feeling of lying down in your own grave?
I tell you what, from 1 to 10 is an 11. It was the most craziest thing ever when the detectives came up to me and said, you know what, we have one more thing we have to do before we go through this whole case. And it was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head. I just could not believe what I was hearing.
That is just unbelievable. All right, well, let's talk about how you got to that point. Your background, you came from Puerto Rico and you opened a gym in Houston, correct?
Yeah, I was born in Puerto Rico, mostly raised in the United States. I lived in the East Coast for a while. Moved to Texas as a teenager. Been boxing since I was about 8 years old. Boxing has been my life. I love boxing. I competed in a lot of amateur fights. I turned pro when I was 17. Things didn't go my way. It was, you know, the pros, you know, it was just something that did not happen for me because I had the wrong kind of management. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to go still be involved with boxing. So I decided still to coach and open up a gym and started from there. And it was something that I still to this day love is boxing.
Yeah, it's obvious you have a real passion for that.
Correct.
Two people came into your life, and let's talk a little bit about each one of these people. First of all, Mundo in 2005. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Mundo actually came, I think it was a little earlier than that. Mundo came into my life when I had a gym. Well, it wasn't my gym. I was helping out at a gym where I had my nonprofit. It was a church. And I still have it. It was a nonprofit called Young Prospects Boxing. And Mundo just happened to walk into my gym, a young man. He was in early 20s, a little bit overweight. And he was very honest with me, told me that he just wanted to learn how to box. You know, he loved boxing. He didn't have the opportunity to do when he was young. But he said, I don't want to compete. I know I'm just a little too old to compete, but I want to learn how to box. And he was very honest. He told me all about his background, and we just kind of, you know, hooked. And he was like a part of my family. I have two sons and a daughter, and he was part of that too. He became my third son.
And then the other person that came into your life was Lulu. What's her actual name?
Her name is Maria de Lourdes Dorantes. That's her maid name. And she goes by Lulu. And I met her in 2007. I was out basically one night. I went out. I was then divorced for about 7-8 years then. And I went out. I wanted to go have some drinks and hang out for a little while. And I went to a place in Woodlands, Texas, which it was a Mexican restaurant that turns into basically a club after 10 or 11, I think it was. So I went there just to hang out, saw some music, you know, that's the stuff that I like. And I saw her. That's where I met her. She was in there, you know, we met and visually attracted to each other and this danced the night away.
And it was a pretty quick romance. And how long before you got married?
Well, actually we got married about a year and a half later. We dated for about a year and a half. So we got to meet each other's family, and she came from Mexico City. She had her son Luis was, I think he was early teens. I say maybe 12, 13. And then her daughter Carla was maybe 6, 7, or 8 maybe. So she had two kids, and I have three from a previous family. I mean, previous marriage. So, we dated for about a year and a half before we got married, decided to get married.
So it suddenly became a pretty big family then.
Yeah, it did. At the beginning, it was a little bit rough, you know, trying to merge our families together because, you know, at that age, kids tend to be jealous of their parents and stuff like that. And my kids were a little older than hers, and they were okay. You know, they understood. But with her, it was sometimes a little tough, you know, getting, with her son because of that's his mother, and he was a little bit jealous of another man coming around, you know.
Yep, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Now, how long before things started to go south with the marriage?
We were doing well, you know, at the beginning of our marriage, it was like the first 3 years. It was like, I guess that's what they call the honeymoon years. It was an excellent. She treated me like a king. You're talking about massages, foot massages. She, you know, get up early in the morning before I even get out of bed, and I had breakfast already made for me. And it was just a wonderful person that treated me so, you know, like a king. And I was so grateful for marrying this person, and we were in love. What I thought was in love.
And the gym was doing pretty well too, right? You're making pretty good money.
Yeah, we decided to open a gym up in around about 2009 or 10. I mean, I think it was. We opened up, a big gym, Woodlands Boxing and Fitness, and it was doing very, very well. Me with my boxing background, and Ludo was very, very savvy with business. She basically took care of the business side of it, and I took care of the training. And later on, she decided to start training people too. But it worked out. At the beginning, it was doing very, very well, and it did well for a long time.
Yeah, it sounds like with each of your skills, it sounds like a perfect partnership.
Exactly, and that's what we thought I had. I mean, that's what I thought I had. You know, the money was coming in. We were doing very well, and the gym was doing very well. So I thought everything was great for a while.
But then it wasn't so great.
Yeah, things we had our differences sometimes, and I think it all started with the kids, especially with their son. You know, when you married a person and they have a kids, and then the young man actually thought that he was the man of the house, and it was got to the point where I would, I understood, and I try to sit there and talk to him and explain to him, this doesn't work like that. You know, there can only be one man in this house, and I'm the one that pays the bills, put, you know, clothes in your back and food in your stomach, and this is how it's going to be. And he was just tough. I think it all started with that, with having problems with the kids. And then she was very, then they started getting jealous with my kids because my kids started doing, they're educated, you know, college, and they did what they do well for themselves. And she was started getting that jealousy between her kids and my kids. And I think it started with that. That was one of our biggest problems at the beginning.
Sounds like a lot of different dynamics happening at the same time.
Yeah, it was.
And then she, at some point there were accusations of abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. She,
how did that come about?
There's a little background on her. You know, when Lulu came to this country, she was here on a visa, American visa. And that's when she got married to me being Puerto Rican, she automatically became, she got a residency, you know, she applied for U.S. citizenship, and in about 3 years later, she became an American citizen. Her kids became an American citizen, and her mother became an American citizen. So, yeah, so they all became American citizen and legally in this country because of me. And then right after she got all that, and I noticed that she started her temper. I know she had a little temper all the time, but, you know, she started changing a little more. We started having more and more arguments. We went on a trip one time on vacation to Puerto Rico. We had a disagreement in Puerto Rico at the hotel, and to the point where we had to get separated. And she slept in one room that night. And I slept in, you know, separate rooms. And I had no idea that she had filed a report, not even a police report. It was a report for the hotel. And then she even put on there that I had scratched her. And I said, you know, and that's when I first, like, wait a second, scratched you? That I never put a hand on her ever, ever. And then she had, you know, scratches on her fingers. And I'm thinking, what? And that's when I figured, no, there's something going on here. But we were able to resolve that problem and talk through it. And like, again, because, you know, one thing that Lulu is, and I'll say is because she's still living, and I don't care if people say that she's changing or not, she knows how to manipulate people. She was a good manipulator. And she knows how to use her beauty and charm to get whatever she wants, kind of like a psychopath. And that's what I felt like that was going on with me, what she was trying to do to me.
When you saw that report that where she was making these accusations that obviously weren't true, did you must have thought, man, do I really know who this person is?
Yeah, she you know, she claimed and to this day, I bet still swears that I did that to her. And they was investigated. And then she tries to tell me that she didn't call the police. I mean, Puerto Rico, even though at the hotel, the securities came up to the room and they talked to me and they, you know, we told them what had happened. You know, we just had a disagreement, but, you know, cause that's one thing that she knew how to do. She knew how to push buttons. She knew exactly what buttons to push to get me involved in a disagreement. And it always started her, you know, talking, just crazy stuff about my kids. And I'm like, look, you know, just be respectful. That's, you know, that's all I'd ask. But when the security for the hotel came up, you know, they talked to her outside, and then some came inside and talked to me, and not one of them. And, you know, if you have scratches or you're bleeding, they would have said, look, you know, she has scratches or she's bleeding somewhere. Then not one of them mentioned that to me because they know, you know, it wasn't true.
Right.
But then when I saw that on the report, I'm like, whoa, what are you talking about? You know, and then she's, you know, nah. This is something, she's up to something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it ended up, you guys finally decided you were going to get a divorce.
Yeah. It got to the point in 2015, she filed for divorce. I was okay with them. You know, we tried to get, you know, to go to counseling before that, and we tried different things. But prior to that, she just didn't want to do it. She said, you know what, this is not going to work out. You know, I want a divorce. But in the divorce, she wanted everything. She wanted the house. She wanted the business. She wanted the car. She wanted everything, you know. You know, I know a lot of men sometimes, you know, they walk away and leave everything and just, you know, start over again. But I feel like, you know what, I worked too hard for everything I have. This gym is doing the business, everything it's just too much work. And I told, you know, we go half. I mean, I told her, I don't know how things work out and work in Mexico, but here is half. And she tried to fight it, you know, and sometimes it got to the point where we couldn't live together. So we got a 2-story home. She was living upstairs and with her mother and her 2 kids. And I was living downstairs by myself. And you talk about tension, you know.
I can imagine. Oh,
and,
man.
You know, she's living upstairs, and I'm, you know, it was just bad. You know, it was just a horrible thing.
Now, how does it work as far as citizenship? Even if you guys got divorced, she still remains a U.S. citizen, right?
Oh, yeah. She is an American citizen. She has all the rights, just like you and me and her kids and her mother. And to this day, I have not gotten one thank you.
I don't think you're going to get that.
No, I don't think so. And I don't expect it. You know, it is what right. It is. You know, they, you know, I'm just, hey, they're here. They're lucky they're here because of me. And then, you know, to try to kill me, that's even incredible.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just 2 little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DS01 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great. And I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25what.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. So one day, there's a conversation in the gym. I think it was with Lulu and her daughter, and your protege or your son, Mundo, overhears that. What was that about?
Yeah, it was crazy because, you know, Mundo, he would take care of the gym for me, especially on the weekends, you know, because sometimes I would, we take a break on Saturday. So he had the key to open it and close it. And even in the evening, sometimes he would come in late. And so he can come and go. That's one person that, other than Lulu and me, that could come in and go whenever they feel like it. That's how much I had trust in him. So Mundo already knew that we were going through a divorce. You know, I had talked to him, and you know, he knew what was going on. But this particular night, I wasn't there at the gym, and he walked in. You know, what he told me is that he walked into a conversation that her daughter Carla was having with Lulu. And the conversations had something to do with Carla told Lulu that there was a kid in the gym from Mexico, and the kid told Carla that he had an uncle in Mexico that killed people, that chopped up people for a living. And I'm like, and that's when Mundo walked him to the conversation, and Mundo told him, hey, you know, I need to watch out what y'all talking about. You never know who's listening, you know? And he was like, and they kind of laughed it off, and they were, you know, like, you know, it was no big deal. And then he said that later on that evening, he kind of pulled Lulu to the side one-on-one when the gym was, you know, there's nobody, you know, hardly anybody there, and they're about to close. And he pulled her to the side and asked her. And mind you, Lulu already knows Mundo's background. Mundo was a young man that, you know, had a checker background, and you know, and I helped him when he was going through a lot of problems. Well, just mentor him, basically, with a lot of stuff. And she knew his background.
His background meant that he knew people that could do stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, his background was, you know, when he was younger, he was involved in gangs and stuff like that. But he was a young man that you know, became a great person and father and great person anyway. So I guess that's what she trusted him when Mundo came up to her and I said, hey, man, so is this about Ramon? And she said, yeah, this is about him. And she goes, I wish they would take him. I wish he would just go away. I wish it would just, you know, disappear. And that's when he said that he made the pistol sign and shoulder, say, you mean disappear like this? You know, he did the pistol sign and shoulder.
Like
shoulder.
Pistol, you mean like his fingers pointing at his head?
Yeah, no, not at his head, but he just did like with his two fingers and a thumb, like a, you know, sign of a pistol. And she said, yeah, like that. And that's when this young man, the decision that he made right there was the one reason that I'm talking to you right now, is because right there and then he said, well, I'll tell you what, you know, he told her, I got the people that can do the job for you. And she felt, you know, she believed him. Mundo called me the next day. You know, I remember that I was driving and he called me, and, you know, Mundo likes to joke around sometimes, and, you know, we joke around and stuff like that. And when he called me and told me that, I said, I told him, Mundo, you know, quit joking around, man. This is, you know, I don't play like that. You know, quit messing around. I don't believe, you know, I don't believe that kind of stuff. And she goes, yeah. He goes, look, I seen that look on people's faces when they want to kill somebody. She's for real. And then he said that he was going to, you know, see about meeting with her later on that evening and start having conversations and recorded the conversation that was on his phone, you know, where she had no idea what was going on. And that's what we'd all started.
I just can't imagine. I mean, she knew your relationship with Mundo, that you were like a father to him. And how could she have such a bad misjudgment of his character to think that he would be involved in this?
Yeah, it was just a weird situation, and it was so many thoughts that went through my head. Like, why does she believe, you know, in him? What does she think that he would do something like that? And not only that, you know, when Mundo, I guess, when he reacted the way he reacted by telling her, you know, I got the people that can do the job. That's when I believe that she thinks like, oh man, you know, I guess she was so desperate too. Like, look, you know, she wanted it done. I think that's what got to her. Like, she was so desperate. Like, yeah, man, just get it done. And that's where it all started.
So it must have taken you a little bit of time just to process the thought of, wow, she really wants to do this.
Yeah. Not only that, I had to drive home and see her. I had to drive after hearing that. I had to go home and see her face and act like I didn't know what was going on. That was the weirdest feeling. And knowing that she's sleeping upstairs and I'm downstairs. So basically I'm sleeping with the enemy in my own house. And I would sleep with one eye open after I found out what was going on.
So how did you guys, what was the plan that you came up with?
Well, actually, Mundo was the one that came out with the plan. He said, what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to have conversations with her. So I'm going to go out there and, you know, talk to her, and we'll record everything. And when we thought we had enough evidence, and, you know, he got to the point where Mundo asked her for money for a dirty gun, you know, what they called, you know, street gun, whatever. And he said that it was going to be $200, and she gave him the money. Once Mundo had the money and we felt like we had enough evidence, we went to the police, and the police, at the beginning, they didn't believe us, you know, not they believe, but they had to, it's, you know, they never had done the precinct where I live, they have never dealt with anything like this. So they talked to Mundo and me together, and then they separated us to make sure our stories, you know, were the same. And shortly after that, they called in the state police, they called in the FBI, they called in the Rangers, and they put a plan together, and that's where it all started with them. Then they took over, and they brought in a undercover police officers to start meeting with Lulu. You know, and this undercover officer was one of the hitmen that Mundo had told Lulu about, that he was going to do the job. So she thought this man she was talking to was the guy that Mundo got for her, and she had no idea he was the undercover officer.
He was a policeman.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Can you talk a little bit about why was it difficult for Mundo to go through with this plan?
Well, you know, Mundo, like I said earlier, he was involved as a young man with gangs. And once you join a gang, and even if you try to leave it, you know, you're in the gang for life. And in the gang life, you don't snitch. You know, you don't snitch on nobody. You don't talk about that kind of stuff, you know, and they take that at heart. And that was the biggest problem that he had. And he told me straight up, this is something that he did it for me, because he in his life, the way he, you know, that's the kind of stuff they don't do. But he felt like that's something that he had to do to save my life, because he had no idea. So he felt like if he didn't take that chance on doing what he did, maybe she would have asked somebody else. And not only that, I still didn't think. I said, you know, I didn't know she had a plan B. So even though we were doing this, I was always looking out. Well, maybe, you know, she told somebody else too. So I didn't know if it was just Mundo and his plan, or then she had talked to somebody else just in case that didn't work. So it was very hectic.
Yeah. If it didn't work with him, obviously she would have tried finding somebody else, like this other kid whose uncle did that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So how did that play out? She paid money, and then what happened after that?
They have the undercover officer, which I think I can't remember. They called him John Boy or Paco, because there was the two hitmen that Mundo had told her about. I forget which one. I think it was Paco that they call, that they're on the undercover officer. His name was, you know, Paco. That's what they use for the undercover. And they would meet with her and Mundo, because, you know, Mundo, I told the officers, look, man, you need to keep Mundo in the loop, because as soon as she finds out that Mundo's out, she's going to start noticing something. So Mundo would always meet with them also at the same time. And they met and in an undercover officer's, you know, a car with all the lights and audios in it. So they had everything. And this particular evening, they told her, you know, so look, you know, we're ready to do the hit, and it's going to cost you $12,000. And she said, well, I tell you what, I don't have all the money right now, but I can give you, you know, some money and some jewelry. And come to find out, the jewelry that she gave him was my jewelry, wedding rings, watches, my own stuff as a down payment to have me kill.
Now, that's irony right there.
Exactly. And then she went to the bank and got some money out, gave him some cash. And then she said, I tell you what, another thing is, like, he wears this real nice watch. He's always wearing it. So when you kill him, you can keep that watch too. It's worth, you know, worth a lot of money. And then, another thing that she said was that as soon as he dies, I'm going to get his pension. I'm going to get all his, retirement. I'm going to get all his money. And with that money, I can pay you the rest. So she had it all planned out.
Yeah, she had obviously put a lot of thought into how everything was going to work out perfectly.
Yeah, she knew exactly how much I was worth dead. They even asked her at one point, one of the things they asked her, you know, to see if she was really, really wanted to go through it and give her one last chance to get out of it. They asked her, do you just want us to beat him up? You know, we can just beat him up. And, you know, she said, no, he's better to me dead. I want him dead.
Yeah, beating you up really wouldn't do anything.
It wasn't going to financially. No. And we were still going through a divorce of this, and that's one thing that she wanted. She wanted to make sure that they kill me before. I think in August or September we were going to finalize our divorce, and this was like end of July, and she told them to look, y'all need to finish before the divorce is finalized, because if he dies after the divorce is finalized, I don't get anything. They'll give it to his kids, you know, and I don't get anything. She was just worried about my kids getting all the money, and she was not going to get anything.
This is a woman without any feeling or empathy, it sounds like.
No, she was just not thinking about nobody but herself. She didn't think about her family, her kids, nothing. All she wanted was, you know what? I'm going to get this divorce. And she felt, I guess, that, look, things were going her way, and her attorney thought they were going her way. But apparently she didn't think things were going her way. And I guess that's what made her go, you know what? I got to take this man out. And the only way it's going to happen is like this.
So she paid that and gave the final order. And that's when you and the cops went into Hollywood mode.
Yeah. See, after all that happened, after she gave the money to them and all the jewelry, and they had enough evidence, basically, they had enough evidence to have her, to get her, have her arrested. And I thought that was going to be it. And I said, okay. They called me in. They said, Ramon, we need to talk to you. And I said, okay. I was used to going in there and talking to them all, you know, through this whole process. And when they took me in there, I remember being at night. And it was kind of scary. It's like, why you bring me in here at night like this? And they have the officers from the FBI, the constables. They were all there in a meeting room. And they explained to me and said, look, you know, we have enough evidence to arrest Lulu right now. But we just don't want to take any chances if we go to a jury trial. And some of these jurors might find her, you know, have sympathy for her because she's a single, you know, because she's a mother. She's never been in problem, you know, any problems. She's, you know, a lot of people in the community know her, you know, from the boxing gym and stuff like that. So they might feel sorry for her. And, you know, and all it takes is one, you know. And so they say, what we're going to do, we need this to be a slam dunk case. This thing has got to be 100%. So what we're going to do is take a picture of you dead and show it to her. And I was like, what did you say, dead? Like what? He said, yeah, we're going to see a picture of you dead, and we're going to put you in a grave, and we're going to show her the picture to have proved that the job was done. And that's what they did. You know, they pulled out real pictures. I never forget. They had like the DA, assistant DA that was there, and he pulled out pictures of real dead people with bullet wounds to the head. And they said, okay, we're going to pick this one right here. This is what we're going to do. And when they had the next day, they said, well, this is going to happen. We're going to disappear you for 3 days. And nobody knew, nobody. I couldn't tell nobody. Mundo, nobody knew where I was at. My family, they had no idea what was going on.
And where were you for those 3 days?
They took me out of town. They took me out of town to a hotel. It wasn't that far from south of Houston.
So where nobody would see you or anything. That's all.
Yeah, nobody knew where. You know, nobody had. I had no idea. They took me out. I had to meet this officer in the middle of the night, and they had everything set up. You know, where I can just, you know, I have no idea what was going on. But anyway, they said we're gonna put this makeup on you. Before that, you know, they took the picture. Before they took me out to the hotel, they took me to this gravesite. And at the gravesite, they already had dug up the hole. And I swear, it looked like something you see in one of these movies from, you know, oh my God, like Scarface or something. You know, when they kill somebody and, you know, put them, you know, it was just a horrible looking thing. It was like a scene from a movie. All these cameras and all these people were there. And they said, okay, we're going to get you down to your underwears and finish up the makeup and put you in, you know, in a position like this. And they, you know, close my eyes and we're going to put some dirt on you. And they took, it was, it seemed like 1,000 pictures they took of me. All I could hear is that 35 millimeter.
How did they do the makeup?
Oh my goodness. That's another thing, because I thought these guys knew what they were doing. And there was these two officers, constables, and they went in there and they had this little kit. And they started, you know, putting this stuff on, and I say, man, what is it? It looked like something you see the one of some kids do for Halloween. And I said, man, this is not going to work. And come to find out, they had just looked at that or learned how to do it on YouTube from this YouTube video on some people knowing, you know, putting bullet wounds on their head for whatever reason, you know, for Halloween or whatever. And that's how they did it. And it came out, and I said, man, let me tell you something. She's not going to go for this, man. I know Lulu, and she knows how to do Photoshop, and she likes that kind of stuff, you know, messing with pictures. She's not going to go for this. I said, well, he's going to have to do. And sure enough, you know, they did it. And this is where it gets crazy. They took the picture to her, and the undercover officers told her that they had finished the job, and they showed her the picture of me. Dead with a bullet, supposedly dead with a bullet wound on the side of my forehead. And the first question that she asked the officer was that he's not getting up, right? And they started laughing. And that hurt so much. I was like,
man.
I mean, when I saw that video, I was like, did she just say he's not getting up and started laughing? And I'm thinking, she thought that she had just hit the lotto. She just hit the lotto when she saw that picture. And
of course, she had no reason to not believe, you know, to believe that it was fake.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, if she wouldn't have any reason to suspect it. And obviously, she really wanted badly to believe it was true.
And
so that's all it took.
She had so many people manipulated by telling lies about me, that I was a drunk, that I was abusive, that I had hit her kids. They had filed false police reports on me. I mean, I was just the worst thing that could, you know, worst man that there could be. So she already had this image of me that so people believe that he's not what people think. So when I died, they were like, oh, he deserved it, you know. And that's the type of person she was. You know, she had a lot of people believing bad things about me, and it was all a lie. And the whole time I had to be quiet. I had to bite my tongue. I couldn't say anything because I already knew what was going on with the murder for hire.
So they showed her that picture, and that kind of, in her mind, that was she finalized the deal. It was all done. And then was it that from that point you were missing for 3 days? Or you'd already been gone 3 days?
No, I had been missing after that because they took the picture and then they took me to the hotel. I'd been missing for the 3 days and nobody knew where I was at. My family, you know, my kids, everybody was looking for me. Then they went and arrested her. And this is the next day after the next day after they showed her the picture, they went to my gym And she was at the in the office with her daughter and her mother. And they walked in, and the two officers walked in and talked to her and asked her told her that they were doing a missing person report on me because I'd been gone for 3 days. And she had this look like she was even surprised, like, whoa, you know, yeah, I don't know. I've been calling. I called his sister and they don't know where he's at. I call his friends. They don't know where he's at. And then she calls and talks to her mother there. Hey, what's the last time you saw Ramon? And she said, I think I saw him Wednesday somewhere, you know. She said something like that, knowing exactly, knowing that the night before she was just laughing because she saw my picture of me dead.
And this is the audio of the day that the officers went to the gym, supposedly to ask Lulu about the fact that Ramon was missing and to see if she knew where he might be. Of course, they knew he was in hiding and she thought he was dead. So she just played dumb and then they arrested her.
Yes, I'm Leila.
Yes.
Okay, Detective Martinez with the constable's office.
Uh-huh.
I had a few questions for you. Is there somewhere we can talk in private?
Sure, absolutely.
Sorry.
My paperwork here.
That's okay.
I never knew there was a boxing gym here. This is nice.
Yes, we have 5 years now here.
Okay. We got a call from, is it okay to talk in front of them?
Just my daughter and my mother.
Okay. Like I said, I'm a detective with the constable office. I got a call today from that apparently Mr. Sosa hasn't been at work today.
That's what they told me. I received a call today from Byron.
And that's his friend.
His friend is at work?
At work.
Okay.
He called me today and he asked me for some information if I have talked to him. I said, well, you know, I haven't seen him. I haven't talked to him. We're going through divorce.
When's the last time you saw Mr. Sosa?
Park Place.
We saw him on Wednesday 15th, the last day.
That's the last time you saw him?
That's the last time I saw him, my mom, and my daughter. I'm here from 4 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And then I go home, I take a nap, I shower, and then come back at around 3.
Okay.
That's when we sometimes see him.
So he hasn't contacted you in the last 24 hours?
No.
When's the last time you checked your phone to make sure you don't have a missed call or anything? Are you like most people, you check your phone a lot?
Oh, no, yeah, I have my phone with me all the time.
Okay, Ms. Sosa, stand up, please. You're under arrest.
You're
under arrest.
Why?
Okay. Ma'am, it's okay.
Arrest?
Stay back. We have a warrant.
I need to talk to my... I'll call... Háblale, por favor. Yeah, háblale, por favor, a Julio. Yo, hablar.
So the officer's right there at... They read her, said, you know what? Your arrest from, they took her away in front of, they arrested her in front of her mother and her daughter. And there were still clients in the gym. So they took her in. And from there on, that was it. She got locked up.
And she knew, she had to know right at that time.
Oh, yeah. She knew exactly what was going on. But, and she was telling her mother right at the, call my attorney. But she knew what she had done. There was no doubt. She and then my family, nobody knew what was going on. And next thing I know, there's a press conference, and my news comes wire to wire in every network around the nation. They show my pit, what happened about me being a murder for hire, or she being arrested for a murder for hire, and that's how my family found out through the news.
Oh, so you didn't even tell them? They found out by watching the news.
Yeah. They I didn't have a chance because they had a press conference, and by the time I could call them and even find out, it was too late. And it was just it was just crazy. People crying and calling me and not understanding what was going on. And they had no idea this was even going on. And it was just, It was crazy, crazy.
So how did you, and of course you'd been missing for 3 days and your kids didn't even know where you were.
Exactly.
How did you reunite with them? Where did you meet up?
Well, back then my oldest son was in San Antonio, Mitchell. He was in San Antonio. He graduated from school, from college, and kept working in San Antonio. And then I have another son in LA. He's in the actor. Chris is in the actor comedian business. And then I have my daughter was out there in LA too. She was modeling back then too. So they have two in LA. So I called the one in San Antonio, Mitchell, and I told him what was going on. And the first thing on his mouth was like, "Dad, you know, what the hell's going on?" And I explained to him, but it was tougher talking to my daughter. That's the one, because she's the youngest. And let me tell you, I've never heard that cry in my life when she heard my voice, because she saw it on the news and it was just crazy knowing, you know, listening to her. She cried and cried and cried. And my other son, it was horrible. Very, very, it was, to this day, still bothers me.
They realized they could have just lost their dad.
Yeah, exactly. And that was close to being that, you know. But thank God, you know, it worked out for me.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of, authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking try free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
The visit to the gym where Lulu got arrested is on video. I'll have that video on the website for this episode so people can watch that if they want to.
Yeah, yeah. It was that situation there. It's kind of crazy that the night before she was laughing and asking the undercover officer what she thought was the hitman if I was not going to get up. And the next day she's all worried about me. Come on. That's the kind of psychopathic, you know, what a psychopath does, you know, that kind of stuff.
So she gets arrested, and I think it was like a year later, she took a plea deal?
Yeah, she was arrested for first-degree solicitation of capital murder, and they gave her $1 million. She was under $1 million bond, and a year and a half later, there was so much evidence stacked up against her that her attorney, you know what? I think she had like three different attorneys, you know, back to back to try to work with her. And they finally gave up and said, you know what, we're just going to plead. And she pleaded down to a second degree capital murder, solicitation of capital murder, and got 20 years. And believe it or not, a lot of people, you know, when she got sentenced, I went to the hearing and they let me talk. They asked me if I wanted to say something to her, and I did. I got up there. And she would never looked at me. She was just standing in front of the judge and looking towards the judge and with her attorney. And I forgave her. I forgave her. I told her, you know, because I was living with this rage. I was living with this anger. I was living with this, just, you know, I cannot go day to day. I wasn't sleeping. I was so much stressed out. And I feel like that was the only way I can release all that stress and anger by telling her, because unless you're in this position, ever in a position like I was, you don't understand the situation that goes through your mind and the anger that I have for her and her family, everybody that was involved with trying to kill me. And I forgave her. And I told her, you know what? Everybody in this courtroom has made mistakes in their life. Either, you know, we're not perfect, but now the mistake that you made, you're going to pay the consequences for, and God is going to take care of it. She never looked at me. She never had no remorse, not once. All the times that we were in court for all the hearings, not one time she had any remorse, not looked at me, you know, and not that I want anything, but at least she felt like, you know, she was right for what she did. So that's how I remember her. The last thing I remember, Lulu loved wearing nice, expensive clothes and shoes that she loved. You know, we did well, you know, with the gym. She loved what, and then to see her in a jumpsuit, a pink and white stripes, chained up, wearing those $1 state shoes. That was the last thing I saw of her when they took her away in chains.
That night that she was shown that picture of you dead and she laughed, that may have been the last night she's laughed since then.
Yeah, that I think so. The way she was laughing, she was very happy. She was, I'm telling you, like I keep telling people that it looked like she had just hit the lotto, literally, because she said, you know, he's not getting up, so now it's time for me to get paid now, basically.
So she was sentenced to 20 years, and when did she actually start serving that time? How much time has she served now?
I believe since 2015, that I guess they started with the time she got arrested in June 2015. So she's going on 4 years, and she's at a state penitentiary in Texas.
Is there a chance that she would get out early?
I'm pretty sure there is, you know, with good behavior. And I think she's been up for parole a couple of times, believe it or not. I had to write letters and I had people write letters but she has been denied.
That seems so soon for a 20-year sentence to be up for parole after a couple of years. That seems weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I don't know how that works in the state of Texas the way, but they have denied her both times. So, I don't know what's going to happen.
Have you thought about when she gets out of prison?
Oh, yeah. Trust me. There's not a day that goes by. I still live with this, you know, not being scared, but always being very, very cautious of everything that's around me. People that are, you know, that's one thing that she did get from me, that to this day, I still have problems trusting people, a lot of trust problems. I've been staying away from sometimes even my family. Even Mundo, you know, a young man that I owe my life to, I have kind of separated myself from a lot of people that helped me. And it's not because I want to, it's just because I just need time to recoup. And it's been every day deal that goes through my head. There was a time where I was sleeping in my own bed with a loaded shotgun. And then I had a 40 millimeter gun in my kitchen, and I had in my car 9mm, I mean, loaded at all times. And that's how I lived for a while. And it's not a way to live, you know, just because I thought there was a, you know, Lulu comes from a family in Mexico, her family, her sister, her brother-in-law, they do well for themselves. They have the business that they own, they do well. And I kept thinking, you know, they can just pay anyone, you know, from Mexico and come over here and take me out or nothing, basically.
Right.
Yeah, and just for revenge, you know, revenge. But I leave it in God's hands. You know, I pray and I let him take care of it. I have people that still watch me. I still, to this day, I watch myself, watch my back. And because I still don't know. I still don't know if there's a plan B, C. I don't trust, you know, I still don't trust. And like I said, being me in a way that I've, the separation that I created with family and Mundo and people that love me. And it's not because I'm trying to be mean or trying to be, you know, it's just because I need time to, and I'm going through counseling too, because it has not been easy. It has not been easy in my life.
It's not like you can find a group therapy with other people who have been targeted for murder. You know? I mean, it's kind of a unique situation that you're in here.
It's been tough. It's been very tough.
And I understand Mundo is trying to keep a low profile as well, fearing retribution from his, you know, past gang activities and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate that he also has to live like that. But what he did for me, and I owe my life to the young man, to Mundo. And I've told people, and I've said it day and I tell whoever it is, you know, that interviews me, that, you know, God puts people in your path for a reason. And he put that young man Mundo in my path for a reason. And he was that angel that saved my life. And if it wasn't for him, I would not be here right now.
Right. And he has of course, being in the part that he played in this is a different perspective. And he's written a book.
Yeah. Mundo, he's written a book. It's called My Son Mundo. I wish him the best. I mean, if people out there listening, you know, go out there and get his book.
Yeah. I'll have a link to where you can buy that book, on the website as well. Yeah. So for anybody that wants to read that.
Yeah. He wishing the best, and I hope people out there go and get his book.
What's your day to day like now? Do you still train young kids to fight?
No. You know what? I sold my gym. It was just too much for me at the time when all this stuff happened. I tried to keep up with it for about almost a year after all this stuff happened. But it was just getting to the point of too many memories and too much work for just me. And it was just, I was, you know, cause we lost a lot of members cause of what happened. And I was eventually building it up again. So I ended up, selling it. I also rented my house out, my house where me and Lulu lived. I rented, it was just too much memories. I moved out, moved into Houston. I was living in the Woodlands area. It's like north of Houston. And I wrote a book. I've been writing a book, and it'll be out soon. And, you know, close to the summertime, it'll be out.
What's the title of your book?
The name of the book is called "I Walked on My Own Grave," and it talks about everything that happened. It talks about me growing up, my family, my kids. And there's stories there, things that I have not mentioned in none of my interviews around the world. I have not mentioned a lot of stuff that are in the book and that are like jaw dropping, you know, things that you're going to be like, wow, how could I live through this? You know, how did he live through that? You know, and I hope people, and what I want too is people to learn, you know, couples to learn from this book. Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, we live in a time where men keep their mouths shut. You know, men don't talk. Men are afraid to call the police. The stigma about being the machismo, the stigma of like, you know, why are you calling the police on a woman? That kind of stuff is men need to speak up. They cannot keep their mouth shut because, you know, there's a lot of women who use sexual assault, we use abuse, we use, and then, you know, when it does happen and is legitimate by a man, they need to throw the book. I mean, I have a mother, a sister, and most importantly, I have a daughter. And if any man does that to one of them, I hope they throw the book at them and they get put away forever, you know. But when you turn it around and a woman does this to a man, knowing that it's all a lie, I could have been in prison for the rest of my life if it was for this woman. I could have been dead because of this woman, you know.
And there are men currently in prison because of accusations that could never been proven. But
exactly, and you know, statistics they show that it's very seldom that happens. But you know what? Let me tell you something. Let that be your father. Let that be your brother. Let that be a man that in your life that happens to. How would you like if they call you and they say, look, your father's locked up for abusing a lady, knowing that he had nothing to do with that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And but when that happens, the book needs to be thrown at her when that happens. And that's what I'm speaking of, for that kind of stuff too.
Good. That's a good cause. You know, this sounds like it has all the elements of a movie. Any possibility of that? Have you thought about that?
You know what? It's a lot of stuff that happened that when I speak about in the book, and I've been, you know, some people have called me about a movie deal, and I've said no, because, you know, a lot of times I don't know about that kind of business, and I haven't made any decisions yet. So when the time comes and it's right, I just want to let the book speak for itself. And if everything goes well, you know, we'll see. But yeah, I've been off for some independent stuff, but I've decided not to yet. I'm going to just let the book go out there and see how it does. And again, you know, it's something that I believe is going to help out not only people that read what happened to me, but I hope they learn from it so it doesn't happen to them. Because if I can save one person or a family or a couple from going through what I went through, I think I've done my job.
Ramon, we are happy to help you share that message. And boy, what an amazing story. And we really appreciate you coming on here and telling it.
Man, it's been a pleasure, Scott. Definitely look forward to listening to your podcast, and hope that everybody out there enjoys this podcast and can learn something from it. And if you know somebody that's going through this, you know, get them help. If you read my book or if you read Mundo's book, I hope you learn something from it. We're not perfect, but we can surely work at with each other. And if it doesn't work out, you just get divorced and make things work that way. You don't have to go to that extreme.
Thanks for listening to this episode. My goal for each show is to introduce you to people and stories that you just won't find on other podcasts. If you want to help support the show, you just need to subscribe, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can click on any of the subscribe buttons on the website, which is whatwasthatlike.com. You'll see all the links right there at the top where you can subscribe directly to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or on whatever app you use to catch your podcasts. And you'll see there are also links to Twitter and Instagram, so you can follow us there, and I hope you do. And if you really want to connect with me and get in on the discussion with other listeners to this show, you can join our private Facebook group. You can find that at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And of course, you can always email me directly at scott@whatwasthatlike.com, or just go to the website and click on contact. I'd love to hear what you think of this episode or a previous episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show, where we'll once again ask the question, what was that like?